Blog Talk Radio. Carol the Coach. Sex, love, and relationships. We talk about it here.
Carol the Coach. Compassion with contemporary relevance.
I am a psychotherapist. I can be your personal life coach, and I can help you with your issues. There are no problems too small or too big. You can talk about anything.
Speaker, columnist, radio TV host, and commentator. Carol the Coach brings messages of wellness and empowerment within reach of everyday people every day.
Almost 5 years ago, I lost my soulmate in an accident. He was killed in a plane crash. Life just for me has seemed to stop.
There are groups all over the city. I mean, I teach one. It is a specific way to start thinking so that you shift how you see the world, which then shifts your energy, and then you feel better and you actually see things differently.
Carol the Coach. Always available to at carolthecoach.com.
Now, I've got Russell on the line.
I'm 47 years old. I'm a truck driver. I'm married. I have a wife in San Francisco.
Okay.
I haven't been home in 6 months. My thing is, I don't know if I have a sex addiction or what the problem is. Why do I want what I can't have? And as soon as I can have it, I don't want it anymore.
You're right on target when you say, I don't know if I have a sexual addiction. Well, guess what? Yes, you do. And you know what? That's my specialty, Russell, so you're at the right place. Continue.
I meet women online, and I'm in a different part of the country. I travel all 48 states, so I love sex.
I hear self-esteem issues. You never felt good enough, and you didn't feel like you were getting what you should have then, and you're reenacting that now. Do you want to change that about yourself? Carol,
the coach. Carol, the coach. Hey, I'm so happy to be here with you tonight. It is my vacation, and I decided instead of playing a replay, I could get away from my group and do an hour show and hopefully help somebody out there who is struggling with sexual addiction or is struggling because they love a sex addict. I don't know. Both of those plights can be very, very difficult, but you're not alone. There are resources that not only will help you to deal with the problems that occur because of sexual addiction, but it will also help to make you the best person possible. That's my guarantee to you. And I know that can be very hard to believe when you're in crisis, your life is unmanageable, you've tried and tried and tried different choices, and it hasn't worked. Now, you may think I'm talking to a sex addict, and I sure could be, but I could also be talking to a partner, because I'm telling you, partners have so many difficulties deciding whether they're going to stay or whether they're going to go. They've been hurt and hurt and hurt, and they just don't think they can take much more trauma. But truly, I have done over 2,000 women's groups. Women are my specialty, even though so is sex addiction. And in sex addiction, I would probably say I see way more men than women. But what I want to tell you is that partners of sex addicts are the strongest people I know because they're able to take the trauma over and over and over again and get stronger, create more self-care, and either A, learn to live with it, whether the addict is active or whether he's in full recovery, or B, they learn what their boundaries are, and they decide that they want to leave. And that, too, is a very, very difficult road to hoe. So partners really struggle with, should I stay or should I go? And they struggle with what are the consequences if a partner slips, if they relapse. And I've really had a lot of wives of sex addicts who are not doing as well as the sex addict. And the reason is a sex addict has these recovery tools, they're working them, they have a sponsor, they go to 12-step meetings, they do the reading, they pray to the universe or God or Buddha or whoever, they find healthy behaviors, and they have this map. Because of the fellowship that they've developed, they have a map to getting healthier. Now, unfortunately, partners don't always work as diligently. And I understand that. I mean, they're sitting there saying to themselves, why should I? Why should I work diligently and have to go to meetings and have to do readings and have to go to group and have to talk to others about this despicable behavior? Why do I have to work so hard? I'm the innocent party here. Well, I know you believe that's true. And all the great marital therapists, okay, get ready for this. I'm going to tell you something, and it probably isn't going to make you happy, and I'm not going to be popular. But I'm telling you this because I want you to know from the bottom of my heart that when I work with partners and they do the work to get healthy, they are way better off than they were before they met the addict. They're stronger. They know assertiveness. They have boundaries. They have consequences. They know what to do. And they're working on a lot of self-care. And that is imperative. So the good news is, when you're asking yourself, why do I have to do the work? I'm the innocent bystander. Just know that you are going to be the best, the healthiest, strongest human being that you could have ever wanted to be if you worked the program. You are actualizing your potential to the point where you're going to get things done, you're going to figure out what is healthy, and you're going to move through all this trauma, all this pain, and you're going to come out stronger on the other end. That's called post-traumatic growth. We've all heard of post-traumatic stress disorder. Well, this is all about the growth that you make. So you need to do the work whether you stay with him or not. I know I'm being a bit sexist here because there are plenty of women that are sex addicts. So their husbands are hurting. Their husbands are the ones that are in pain. Their husbands are deciding, what do I do? Do I rip this family apart? What do I do? I know it's really tough. And tonight we're going to be talking with a partner of a sex addict who has really been through a lot. And I'm going to treat this hour like it's an intake. I'm going to start from the beginning. I'm going to pretend that this woman is in my office and you're going to get to hear a therapy session. So I'm going to get an overview of what she's dealing with, and then I'm going to make suggestions of what she needs to do. She's already written me an email, and she's very wise, and she's already sought out many of the resources. That makes my job even harder. When you're together enough that you've done some good reading, you've been to the right places, you're in process. But we'll see if there's not something we can add. For this listener, who's a partner of a sex addict, I applaud her for her courage. Okay, so here I am, sitting at my lake cabin. It is raining cats and dogs out there, and I'm hoping that this internet show goes through. I'm hoping that everything works out fine, because, you know, when there's a storm, you just cannot depend on internet access, let alone phone service. So I'm just going to continue to hope that everything works out just fine, and if something doesn't, let me tell you, I tried. Being that I am on vacation, I just want you to know I'm always here for you. And if you need some advice, you can email me at carolthecoach@aol.com. If you're looking for good therapy in your city, you can go to www.sexhelp.com and put in your zip code and find out who has the expertise to help you with this problem, whether you be an addict, a partner, or a loved one. And last but not least, you can go to my website. I actually have two. I have sexhelp.com. No, well, actually, it's called sexhelpwithcarolthecoach.com. And that will give you good information. You'll get to hear plenty of my podcasts. You'll get to see some blogs that I've written. And you'll get a flavor for what kind of work do you have to do when you're an addict or a partner. Then, if you want something a little bit lighter, maybe a little bit more motivating, you can do one of two things. I actually have done about 70 life skills shows under the title Your Best Life with Carol the Coach. And you can go to Blog Talk or you can go to iTunes and search Carol the Coach or Your Best Life and download all those shows. And that really is as if you're in therapy with me, you know, because I do a lot of life skill training. I find that so many people don't know how to organize their life, and there are things they want to do, and they're not sure how to get them done. And so being that I'm a coach and a mental health therapist, I work real hard with my clients to take their life to the next level. Now, mental health means that you heal the pain. Life coaching means you take somebody to their highest potential. So go to iTunes and make sure you key in Your Best Life or Carol the Coach. And those 70 shows will come up and you can download them and get some information from my website, carolthecoach.com. All right. Well, I have my guest on the line. And I am just so pleased that she had the courage and the gumption to put her life out there so that she can help others. And so, Sandy, I was sharing with your listening audience that what I really want to do is pretend I don't know anything, get the information, and see if we can't actually help you get your life more organized since you're already doing a pretty good job. So welcome to the Carol the Coach Show. How are you tonight?
I'm doing well. Thank you, Carol. I really appreciate you letting me share my story. So thank you.
Well, yes, and you have quite a story. I mean, for some people, as you all know, they can just find out about it and it begins to unravel and they really have no idea what they're dealing with for the first week, month, or even year that they're with their addict. So tell us a little bit about what happened to you. How did you find out about sex addiction?
Okay, well, I honestly really didn't know much about sex addiction, much like most people, and I consider myself a fairly educated person. That being said, in February of this year, which really put me on this path of learning what sex addiction is and how I am part of this addiction, is that my husband and I were enjoying an evening at home. We have three small children. They were in bed. The only time my husband and I really have any time together, because he's the sole breadwinner and he works quite a bit and I stay home with the kids. We were watching one of our favorite television shows, catching up with each other. It was Thursday night, I believe. And I just started saying how happy I was in our life, even though things were crazy and we were stressed, don't have a lot of sleep, just typical life of family with three kids. And my husband started sobbing and said that he had not been a very good husband, that he had had four extramarital affairs and wanted a divorce. This was all a shock to me. I must say that prior to that, a few months, I had noticed that he had been becoming emotionally withdrawn. I have bipolar myself, and it's something that I'm a very high-functioning bipolar. I've always been very open and out front about it, and I've always sought treatment when needed. So I consider myself someone that recognizes the signs of depression, and I noticed that in my husband every now and again through our 20 years together, but I kept asking him the past few months, you know, are you okay? Something seems off. You just seem quiet. You know, he just seemed withdrawn from not only me, but also from our children. Now, an important distinction in my mind is that even though he was emotionally withdrawn, we were still having frequent and satisfying sex, which is something we've always had. So I know sex addiction is not about sex, but for me, that was a hallmark of, oh, things are great.
Well, absolutely, and I'm glad you brought that up because so many partners, they don't understand how their husband could have these kind of problems because they are having good sex. So continue.
Exactly. This my entire world was turned upside down. I was blindsided, to say the least. That night began a really painful journey for us both. For myself, I was just, how could this happen? How did I not know? But for some reason, this little voice inside me actually said, is it possible you could be a sex addict? I've had no reason to think that ever in my life about him. But there was something inside me that sparked, to which he replied, no, I'm not a sex addict because I don't have sex with men and I don't have sex with prostitutes. And you and I both know that that is not an answer because while both of those things could be part of someone's sex addiction, they are not absolutes if you are a sex addict. It really depends on each
right,
person.
Right, that's kind of the stereotype, isn't it? That,
yes,
that you
it
have
is.
To be out with prostitutes, yeah.
Yes, and again, that's part of the story he has been telling himself to not put himself in that category, but I'll get to that later. So this led me on a journey of reading quite a bit. I do have friends and family whom I immediately told, this is what my husband just told me, because I was in shock and I knew I needed a support network. And I started reading books about relationships. I started listening to a podcast about marriage and things just weren't adding up. I'm like, okay, well, we don't have these problems. Okay, maybe this, but nothing out of the ordinary, nothing that would make sense with the egregious acts of four affairs and wanting a divorce out of. Then I started reading books about affairs. And again, okay, one affair, a current affair, you know, they just weren't adding up. And then I stumbled upon sex addiction as sort of footnotes to these affairs in the terms of serial affairs or multiple affairs. So that led me on the path of researching sex addiction online. I came across your information. I started listening to your podcasts and scarily mm-hmm. things sounded too familiar. Several websites and I was just checking off the bullet points because suddenly if my husband had not told me about these affairs, I would not have been able to connect the dots. When we first met, the signs were there, but because we were so young, neither of us knew of sex addiction and neither of us had really been in a serious, serious relationship with anyone else to know what was normal, so to speak. These things went unchecked, I guess I could say, and because he wasn't completely honest about what he was doing either. So I'll start there. That's what brought me here. But the dots that I started to connect, I really looked back in our 20-year history and saw this really escalating and progressing. And the first thing I will say is that when we first met, we were very intensely attracted to each other, not just intellectually and emotionally, but also physically and sexually. That was like we were just out the gate, you know, just really intense. And we've maintained that. But in addition to that, I knew of him dabbling in chat rooms for sexual reasons. Flirting, I guess, would be the most minimal reason. And that was in college. We both went to college in the early to mid-90s. So it was age appropriate and era appropriate because the internet was taking off and we were both of an age where, you know, you explore certain things. So it didn't seem that odd, but I was very sensitive to it. And I felt very hurt as his girlfriend then that he was flirting with other girls. He was also someone that would stare at women or ogle or flirt in my presence. And that would make me feel very upset. And I would let that be known. But I was sort of made to feel that I was being hypersensitive to the situation. And in some cases, there may have been a bit to that because I do or I should say, I did have a very low self-esteem then. I've always been very sensitive about my appearance, much less now, but still. So it was sort of excused in a way, not his problem, but my problem. From there,
okay. Now, can I ask you, Sandy?
Sure.
Because obviously, he came clean, and it was almost he came clean out of guilt because you were so happy and you were so glad that your marriage was pretty much on track. Would you not agree?
I don't know if it was guilt. I don't know what it was, but yes, I think that would be a fair assumption. I would really want to ask him that. Honestly, but I think that is a fair assumption. Yes, looking back, I think that fits well. Yes, guilt.
And can I ask you, had he ever been diagnosed with a certifiable mental health condition?
No, and there are two reasons for that. One is he's never thought that he's ever had an issue. He's never identified himself as someone having a mental health issue. The second part to that is that being a male and the way that he was raised, men don't cry, boys don't cry. And it's sort of a stigma to have a mental illness, even though he's married to someone that has bipolar. It's not okay for him to have any sort of mental issues. Does that make sense? And this he has discussed with me recently. That's just the way it is. So anytime
so let
that
me
you
ask
make
you
a,
another can I sure. check in with you though? I get that, you know, no, there was never any clear-cut diagnosis. In part, he's a typical male in that they don't want to see themselves as weak, and so they may not even acknowledge things that are bothering them. Now,
correct.
That was you said in February when he actually shared or disclosed the information, correct?
Mm-hmm. Correct, very minimal information.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. So when did you realize that it got worse or that it was more extreme or intensive? Mm-hmm.
Well, when I started to piece it together and I thought, okay, you know, because I started asking questions and I got the trickle of truth over a period of months, I started to realize that when I first met him, there were these chat room interactions. When we started living together and we were engaged and then married, he was still on the computer. And when I would walk into the room, he would quickly collapse the screen. The cookies would be deleted. The internet history would be deleted. I would walk into the room and say, "What are you looking at? What are you doing?" And there would be times that I would catch him watching pornography. And I would be offended by it. Now, we have tried to watch pornography together, and that was okay, but it was that it was secretive that it hurt my feelings. So he would deny it. So that was kind of an issue with us. But at the time, again, like I said, I thought it was my issue, not his issue. And he made it seem that way. All guys do this. You know, you're just being sensitive. I'm not cheating on you. I'm just watching pornography. That sort of line of thinking. I did not realize that... Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I was just getting ready to ask you. So what were the types of sexual addiction? I mean, obviously you said he had four affairs, right?
Yes.
And he was looking at
the
porn.
Time.
He'd been doing yes. porn into his late teens or early 20s, college age. Mm-hmm. What else was he doing that was suspect of sexual addiction?
Well, I was really not aware of a lot of it, but I can tell you now what I do know and what he has admitted to. But the dots that I was able to put together was the masturbating to porn quite frequently, the websites, the pornography, the chat rooms for sexual purposes, flirting. Those things were all suspect. He also frequented strip clubs, which I did not know about because I made it very clear early in our relationship that I feel disrespected. And if you want to be in a relationship with me, I feel better if you do not frequent those places. I would tolerate the occasional bachelor party, but I had no idea that my fiance and then husband was going to strip clubs once, twice a week, usually with his friends, but quite often he would go on his own on the way home from work. And I did not know this. In addition to this, when we were first married, he was a very, very heavy drinker. Now, when we were in college, there was a fair bit of drinking on his end, but again, it was almost age appropriate. I am the daughter of a recovered alcoholic, so the last thing I wanted was an alcoholic for a spouse. And I was very clear about that, and I thought I had picked someone that was not going to be an alcoholic. But within the first 4 or 5 years of our marriage, I thought that I had married an alcoholic because he would drink quite heavily. Okay. He would be gone all night long or till 4 in the morning, not answer his phone, not call me, not let me know his whereabouts. And then come home with a very surly attitude, like, what do you care? You know, I can do what I want sort of thing, like a rebellious teenager. Little did I know that that drinking was sort of the cover up or the escape from what he was actually doing, which is the same time frame as these four affairs that lasted over 5 years. On and off, one of which was with one particular woman over the course of 5 years, and the other three came intermittently whenever she was not around. And then,
okay, now I want to ask you something. I want to ask you something about that.
Sure.
So obviously, several of these relationships were lengthy. They weren't one night stands. They weren't hookups, so to speak. They were literally relationships. Now,
yes, and that's part.
Well, and I want to know, what do you think he was getting out of these relationships? Because that's a lot of diversity. That's a lot of, it's a lot of diversity in a 5 year period to be married, to have kids, and then to have several relationships.
Well, during our first 5 years of marriage, we did not have children. We actually did not have a child until we were both around 30. So our first child came at the tail end of this 5 year stint of relationships outside of the marriage. Speaking to him now and him now recognizing that he is a sex addict, and he also identifies as a sex and love addict. He has listened to quite a few of your podcasts now. That he's sort of in the know. He says that he's woken up. He feels like he just woke up from a bad dream, that he sees it now. He identifies as a sex and love addict, and he feels that he gets validation, admiration, accreditation, and any kind of a positive from someone else. He gets that mirrored effect that he's a good person and that he's worth something because he doesn't have a very high self-esteem. And I did not know that.
I was just getting ready to say, it seems like his self-esteem was definitely lacking, as well as, I wonder if about him specifically, that when engaged in a relationship that validates him and affirms him, whether he has a chemical reaction that maybe produces more dopamine than the average person. So neurochemically, the sex addiction may be stronger.
Yeah, that is something that he and I are both wondering now. Obviously, I'm not qualified to make these assertions, and he needs to speak with his, he's in the process of finding an individual counselor to kind of figure out what makes him tick and why he did behave this way. And there's a lot more to it that I'll get to, but in terms of relationships, it's more than just the sex for him. It's about kind of the, you know, how there's two different kinds of love, the adrenaline, and then there's the endorphin. The adrenaline is that first rush of excitement when you're first falling in love. And then the endorphin love is the mature, long-term love that you feel. He has said this, he thinks he's addicted to the adrenaline because it also carries over into, he mentioned to me the other day that one of the days in the past 6 months, he found himself driving at 130 miles an hour on the freeway, which only has a speed limit of 55. And it's because of that rush of adrenaline, that thrill-seeking sense that he has. So he does acknowledge that there is something to that. Yeah.
And I know that we're jumping the gun here, but you did just mention that he's in the process of getting a therapist.
Correct.
And I know that you two know how to seek out specialized help, because you're seeing a therapist, correct?
So I'm seeing an individual counselor. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Okay. Well, so you're seeing an individual counselor, and you've been in therapy since February?
Yes. As soon as he said he wanted a divorce, I found myself an individual counselor. And then I started going to Essanon once I realized that my husband was probably a sex addict. And they were kind to tell me about a psychologist who deals with people of all addictions, but also has dealt with many people with sex addictions. So my husband and I see this particular psychologist together as a couple. And he has recently been referred to a sex therapist. I don't think that's her only title, but someone that specializes in individuals with sexual addiction. We only have 3 CSATs in our state, only one of whom is within a 25-mile radius of our home. I did visit this particular individual early on to sort of lay all the cards on the table and say, this is what I'm reading, this is what I know, tell me. And she pretty much said, yes, you don't need to say anymore. He's a classic case. So I have referred myself to a CSAT on one occasion, but unfortunately our insurance does not cover it and it's not very easily accessible. So, but it is, we are dealing with a psychologist whom is very helpful and very knowledgeable. We are very fortunate to have such a person on, you know, working with us currently. So.
Well, excellent, because I'll tell you, one of the ways that you know that your therapist is a good therapist, if they're not a CSAT, and for those listening out there, a CSAT is a certified sexual addiction therapist. One of the ways that you can tell is if you do your reading and you do find out about the sex addiction yourself and your therapist is on track and they're teaching you things that you did not learn through your own reading. And you, Sandy, mentioned that you had done some reading. So can you share some books or some articles or some sites that you found particularly helpful?
Sure. And I'm going to have to do this from memory. I probably should have prepared a list for you ahead of time. So my apologies. And I'm speaking on my cell phone.
No problem.
Which is where I have all of these things cataloged. I became great friends with iBooks the past few months, reading so many books. I have read A Couple's Guide to Sex Addiction, which I found very helpful, the first half anyway, until my husband sort of came out of denial. Now we're currently reading the second half together. I've read about 2 of Patrick Carn's books, one of which I do know is Out of the Shadows. I can't remember the title of the other one. I read Claudia Black's Deceived. I've also read, I forget the author's name, A House Interrupted, which I really identified with in terms of her story because of the alcohol and the multiple affairs. Yes,
well,
that's
exactly
how I found out about
her on the show. And that House Interrupted is the best narrative bibliography of a woman who dealt with sex addiction and was madly in love with her husband from college on up and has really grown stronger. And I don't know if you got to listen to the beginning of the show, but I was talking about the resentment that partners feel because they're thinking, why do I have to work so hard? I'm a victim of this disease. I didn't cause it. I can't control it. I can't cure it. Why do I have to work so hard? But truly, you just mentioned some excellent books, and I have also had Claudia Black on the show, and Deceived is one of the best books for partners that there is. Another book for partners that is considered the Bible, and you may have seen this, is Mending the Shattered Heart. Have you gotten to read that book?
I have not yet read that book. I don't think it was on iBooks, or I have yet to get to it. You have to see my iBooks thing. It is chock full. I've read several articles online by Robert Weiss. I think it's Weiss, maybe it's Weiss, not sure. He's very knowledgeable. There are a lot of things available on YouTube if you type in sex addiction or sex and love addiction. I also went to the websites for COSA, C-O-S-A, for Essanon, which is the group I attend. I also reached out via the website to individuals for COSLAA, which is for partners of sex and love addicts. Unfortunately, there are no chapters in the state in which I live, but those people are out there and they will respond to you if you reach out to them. It is a very loving community. I must say, though, I have yet to feel the resentment of why should I have to do my work. I think because I have bipolar and I've always had to do the work on myself, I see this as a mental illness just as well. So my husband has always been there for me. I don't slight anyone with a mental illness. And I do see it as a mental illness just because of the brain chemicals involved. I am here for him. All I've ever wanted was for him to acknowledge it and that we can heal together. So I'm willing to do the work if he's willing to do the work. But I still have to do the work whether he's with me or not.
You. And let me tell you, that says that you have good emotional intelligence. You have a high emotional IQ because clearly that is the number one feeling that most partners have. And you've already bypassed that because you've had your own illnesses and had to struggle through them. So I so appreciate that about you. Now continue with your story. I'm going to be interjecting from time to time because I do want our listening audience to learn some things from you that they can't get from me. So continue.
Okay. Please, and feel free to interrupt or interject whenever you feel necessary. I completely understand. So I did connect these dots and finally realized he might be a sex addict. And I kind of compared notes with a select friends and family that I felt very close to because this isn't something that you want to wave a flag around about.
Right.
I was very doubtful, even though I had all the clues and I had professionals like yourself reiterating everything I knew. I reached out to you via email and you said, of course he is. I went to the CSAT in person and she said, of course he is. I went to the psychologist referred to Essanon. Of course he is. So it took me about a month and a half, though, for me to come out of denial about it and for me to accept it. And the day I did accept it, my husband came home from work early and something I suspected since day one that he said he wanted a divorce because that piece was just so different than a lot of the stories I was reading about sex addiction. He admitted that he has a current affair that he started this past December. And he found this woman via Craigslist, which is his favorite mode of grooming people. That they had only known each other a month when he decided that he loved her more than he's loved anyone in his life. And that he wanted to divorce me and basically abandon me and our three children and start a whole new life with her. He was absolutely delusional. And when I think about the way that he behaved during this time frame, that's when I see the addiction qualities because it was like he was kidnapped. It was not him. It was another person that was before me. He just behaved in such an erratic way. With no logical sense of anything.
That's interesting you would call it. Yeah, it's interesting that you would call it kidnap because one of the things we know about sexual addiction is that it hijacks the brain, and that's what you're referencing there. That his brain was hijacked. This was not the man that you thought you married. This was the addict who was doing whatever he could to get those endorphins and perhaps, like you said, the adrenaline. So continue.
Yes, exactly. And the only reason he came out to me about the current affair was because she basically dumped him. She was married as well and had children, and she sort of thought better of her own situation and decided to pursue things with her husband. So my husband was kind of left high and dry. He told me he wanted a divorce. He had actually removed himself from our bedroom and stopped having any sort of physical contact with me, sex, hugs, kisses, and was sleeping in our basement on a cot in a sleeping bag. And he could not move out because we just do not have the finances to do that. And if he had moved out, people would know that he had a girlfriend. So he was, he was just kind of trying to be very deceptive, but he did tell the truth. And again, the trickle of truth came out. I now know that when the 5-year stint of the four affairs ended back in 2007, he kept saying to me that, I haven't cheated and I had an urge to cheat in December. And that urge to cheat just rang with me because he told me that he swore off cheating in 2007. So the word swearing off and urge, again, that's just the addictive words that just, they just really, I clung to those words. Those scared me so much. But the way he was able to maintain what you call his deal-breaking behaviors, which would be having an affair, having physical contact with another human being in a sexual way, is that he would masturbate frequently to pornography by his own admission every day, once to twice a day. And in addition to that, he would post Craigslist ads. At first, he told me it was maybe once a year he would post an ad looking for a female partner, but it would just amount to exchanges of emails, maybe some nude pictures back and forth, and then it would fizzle out, but never an actual physical meeting. Well, the trickle of truth has continued, and I, since the last time I spoke with you, I, for some reason, asked him what were the email addresses you were using, and I plugged them into Craigslist and asked for the passwords. And because he's doing everything now to be as honest and forthcoming as possible, he provided me with those begrudgingly, and it took him a lot of courage to do that, because, I mean, it takes a lot to be honest about all these secrets. I recognize that, and I appreciate that from him. It was hard for him.
Absolutely.
So as devastating as it was for me, I know how hard it was for him. And on July 4th, I had before me probably about 50 to 60 Craigslist postings. And this is where I really see his fantasy world. We see someone on the street and not just look, but actually ogle and stare and take that image with him, fantasize about that person, post a Craigslist ad to that person. You know, example, I saw you walking on such and such a street on this day at this time. You were wearing this outfit. You were very attractive. And he would describe what he liked about the person or what he would like to do with the person. And he would put ads on Craigslist like that. Or he would post ads looking for someone to live out some sort of fantasy that he had. And his fantasies ran a really wide range of diversity, from sexual acts to different types of people, different ages of people, obsession with a certain type of sexual act. It was really all over the place. And it was really difficult for me to read these ads because they were so personal to me, even though I know it's not about me, because some of them referenced me in that I was somehow medically unable to have sex, referring to the fact that I was 8 or 9 months pregnant, you know. Even though, you know, it's, I don't mean to chuckle now, I guess it's just so crazy. If I don't laugh about it, I'll cry about it. But it really made it so obvious to me just how, I don't want to say this the wrong way, but really just how sick he is, how mentally ill he is, and that this is a true illness. This is something that he needs recovery from. It must have been tormenting for him to have these constant sexual fantasies and to keep these secrets, especially to keep them from me. And I do know in my heart of hearts that he loves me very deeply and very honestly. And I must say that now he's doing everything that he can to make that known and to be the person he wants to be and that he's always thought of himself to be. It's just very tragic that it's taken him 20 plus years to get to this point. In some ways, I'm very thankful that he and I have been together for so long, because had we not been, no one else would have seen this escalating pattern and brought it to his attention. If he had not been married to me and had just multiple relationships, one after another, at what point would this seem normal or abnormal? So...
Well, and let me ask you, because one of the second things that people have so much difficulty with when they're a partner of a sex addict is the pain that they've had to deal with, and the fact that, you know, over a week, a month, a year, they're finding more and more information out. That's one of the reasons that CSATs sometimes talk about the fact that you need a formal disclosure so that you can work through all of the secrets at one time so you don't ever have to worry about, you know, getting shot up with another secret. Do you think you've learned all the secrets now?
I have to be honest. I feel that I now know the majority of them, but I keep telling him I feel like I only know the tip of the iceberg and that there's much more secretive stuff hidden that has yet to come out. Now, some of these things may be because so much time has passed over these 20 years, he may have honestly forgotten about them, or they may be things that he just has tried to repress so much. Because since I spoke with you 2 weeks or 3 weeks ago, there have been two or three major things that have come out that I don't feel comfortable sharing on air with you, but just know that they are of such a nature that they are closely guarded secrets for him. So I know for him to share those with me that we're getting pretty close to the bottom of this iceberg, but I'm sure that there will be other things that come out in time. And as the partner, my biggest fear is if I need to know all of the information in order to make an educated decision about whether or not I want to continue in this relationship or whether or not it's salvageable. At this point, I feel that it is. And I did read early on not to make any major life-changing decisions for at least a year from the start of your recovery. So I've been very honest with my husband about that, that I am not making any major life-changing decisions, namely divorce, until a year from this past February. So February of 2016, I will reevaluate my life and see where we have been heading this past year and if it's still something that I want to continue with. My gut feeling is that it will be, but I can't see the future. I don't know what holds for the two of us until this coming February. But he and I seem to be on the right track. But I have to be honest, as a partner, I do see things as a mental illness, and I do really have a lot of empathy for him. But don't get me wrong, I'm very angry too. Why me? Why is this happening to me? Why couldn't he just be honest with me? You know, all the whys are coming up. More importantly, why do this to our children? Why have children with me if you were behaving this way? Because the bulk of his really entrenched behaviors were pretty significant before we had children. And we chose to have our first child, and we tried to have our first child. It was not a sudden surprise. So this was a decision that he and I both made and that took time to create. So I have struggled with that because it sort of takes away from me the experience of my first pregnancy and my first child as not being as special as I wanted it to be or thought that it was. And that's really, it's not so much the sexual acting out that hurts, it's the lies and the betrayal that hurts and the constant lies. We are still dealing with lying. I keep saying to him, when do the lies end? Because it's not just sexually acting out that he lies about. There are just little weird things that he lies about. And I've spoken with a lot of my Essanon friends, and apparently that is pretty common because they've had to create this secretive world. One lie leads to another. So even though a lie is not necessarily about the sexually acting out, it's somehow linked to that behavior of having to always lie. So that's something we're working on now, and it's very painful to deal with. But it does hurt. And my biggest issue is I feel compared. I'm nervous to be naked in front of my husband. I'm nervous to be sexually interactive with him. We've recently gotten over that hump. We did not engage in any sexual activity for 3 months. And it wasn't until this past month we started reconnecting. And so we have been engaging in sexual activity together. And it's almost pretty much normal the way I remember it before I knew all this craziness. But I still occasionally will be triggered by things during sex because my mind will wander and I'll start thinking, you know, is this what he did with them? Or, you know, things that I thought were special between he and I no longer seem so special. Does that make sense at all to you? Carol?
Yes, that certainly makes sense to me. And now that we're getting towards the end of the show, I want you to talk about the growth that you've made, as well mm-hmm. as the direction that you're going in the future.
Sure. As I said, I do have bipolar, so my journey has I've always been on this journey of improving myself and sort of maintaining a sense of, am I emotionally healthy? Am I mentally healthy? And I've heard you say several times that sex addiction can be a gift, and I do see how that can be true, not just for the sex addicts, but also for their partners. And in my case, I do see where my husband and I have this amazing opportunity to really connect even deeper than we have previously. But for myself, I see where I have the opportunity to be sure that I can stand on my own two feet as an individual, whether I'm with my husband or not, or if I'm with another person or not. I feel very confident that I am able to hold my own and be a single parent if I need to be. And I really have no fear. I mean, I sounds kind of joking, but I mean, how much worse could it possibly get? You know, I really feel strong and empowered. And in hindsight, I'm very proud of myself that I was able to figure this out on my own, you know, in the span of 2 to 4 months and really act upon it. And it's because I didn't waver and because I found my own sense of inner strength that we are where we are now. But even if my husband was not here, I would continue this journey. I've not only read books about sex addiction, but I've also read books about bipolar more than I had read before. I've also read books, started reading some Buddhist things, but just sort of really exploring who I am and what kind of person I want to be, what kind of parent I want to be. And as a side note, this has really taken a toll on me as a parent because I am not as present as a parent as I once was. And I feel the worst for my children because they're not getting the best mother that they had been accustomed to. This has really taken a toll on our family. So it's not just between my husband and I, but it's our family unit. And that even extends to my parents, his siblings, my siblings, you know, our entire family network. But I know that I have the strength to carry on, and I know that I'm constantly being introspective about where I am and who I am.
You know, it sounds like you're both very, very motivated to get healthy, despite the fact that you're dealing with even more secrets that have come out just recently. You're both really working hard, and that's very important. You're seeking therapy. You're doing a support group. Is he doing a support group?
He is. I sort of gave him an ultimatum because I did ask him to leave the house for about 2 weeks. And not live here, basically. And part of my ultimatum for him to return to the home was that he would at least go to 6 SA meetings. I'm very fortunate that when I go to Essanon, the SA meeting is just above in the same church. So we actually have a date night every Friday now where we attend our respective meetings. He went to the first meeting, and I was told by my friends for him to come out of there cursing like a sailor that he didn't belong there, and pardon what I'm going to say, I don't believe this, but this is cliche, that the people in there were perverts, he's not as bad as them, he doesn't belong there. But apparently something in that first meeting did resonate with him, and it did start to shift his thinking, and he slowly came out of denial. So he does attend SA meetings every Friday, and he's currently looking into some SLAA.
Yeah, and you know, that's another question that a lot of listeners have. They go, is my addict, you know, a love addict, or is my addict a sex addict? And what I can say to our listeners, as you listen to Sandy's story, it's really important for you to do the reading, to get the right kind of therapist to help make that determination, because each one of those are treated a little bit differently. I mean, truly, a love addict, if one's solely a love addict, and I think, Sandy, you identified him as both, then that love addict really needs people. He identifies himself as a love addict.
As both a sex and love addict, yes, he identifies as both. And he recently heard one of your podcasts that addressed that, and he pretty much checked off every box. So he himself feels comfortable with that as being his label.
Oh, fantastic. And if you go on the Sex and Love Addicts website, there is a 42-question questionnaire that will help to determine, are you a love addict? So for anybody who's listening that wants to know that, they can certainly do that.
Yes, and he did now, take that, and he,
So that is great that he took it, because that helped to clarify things. Do you feel hopeful for your relationship?
At this point, I feel very hopeful, but at the same time, I'm trying to be realistic. I don't want to be his police officer. So at this point, I am not checking up on him. I am not checking his phone. I am not checking the history on our computer, because if he is going, if he wants to do these things, he will find a way, and he will find a way to cover it up, as he has. And I don't want the role of parent, and he doesn't want the role of child. So I'm trusting him. I'm trusting him to be trustworthy, but I'm also very skeptical. He is a lot more transparent about where he is and when. We recently went on a beach vacation, which I was told by all of my Essanon friends is probably the worst place to go with an SA, particularly one that has, you know, ogling and fantasy problems. I shouldn't say problems, but issues. And it was a very successful family beach vacation, but there were some stumbling blocks. I did get upset a few times on the beach, and I'm not one to wear a bathing suit, so, you know, it was even more tricky for me. But we are progressing, and I see the light at the end of the tunnel, and I hope that this is something I can rely on. I hope that is where we are headed. So I do feel most hopeful.
And Sandy, we do have to end the show, but I so appreciate you sharing this, because you can hear in Sandy's voice that she has faith that if they keep working this thing through, they'll figure out the formula to have a very good, healthy, and honest marriage. And it's going to take a while. It's not anything that's typically done in the first year. As a matter of fact, Patrick Karn says it takes 5 years to totally recircuit your neurocircuitry, and that is so important for the addict. So as we end for right now, is there anything else that you would really like to share? One last word of advice to our listening audience.
I guess my biggest piece of advice is that if you are a sex addict, or you suspect that you might have an issue in this way, just be honest with yourself. It's really hard, but if you are honest with yourself, there is help out there, and no one is going to turn away from you. If anything, the people that love you will love you more and support you. And if you are a partner of a sex addict, or a sex and love addict, or a love addict, that your partner to know the truth. And it's only when they know the truth, you know, only when you know the truth as a partner, that you can make the right decisions. And you just said it perfectly, healthy and happy and honest. It's the honesty that is the key component to everything. And not only for the sex addict to be honest, but for the partner to be honest too. We both have to be honest about our feelings, whether they are negative or positive. You can't be afraid to hurt someone else's feelings. You have to be honest and true to yourself. And only when you do that, do you really get it tenfold back from someone else. So that's really my biggest piece of experience and advice would be, just be honest with how you're thinking and feeling. And if you suspect that this is an issue in your life for yourself or for your partner, there is help out there. Just reach out. You will be surprised at how many other people around you are dealing with the same issue. It's not as, you know, uncommon as some people will lead you to believe.
Oh, Sandy, thank you so much. And I appreciate your feedback and your courage and your wisdom, and good luck to you in the future.
Thank you. And we will be continuing to listen to your podcast. They are very informative and helpful. I appreciate the work that you're doing. And thank you for letting me share my story tonight.
Well, thank you, Sandy. Have a great week.
You as well.
All right. Okay. Thank you so much. I mean, obviously, this is a woman that had a lot to say. You know, she has been going through this since February, and, you know, I know that many of my partners that I work with, they've been going through this for anywhere from 1 to 10 years, so and sometimes even over that. You have to decide, how am I going to grow from it? How's it going to make me stronger? Okay, I want to remind all partners of sex addicts that if you're in therapy, I have a number for you. This research psychologist is seeking partners of, partners of any individual with sexual addiction. The partner must be at least 25 years old and have been with their partner in a committed relationship for at least 2 years. And the purpose of the study will be to describe what life is like with a partner who has had sexual addiction and is participating in a 12-step program. So give Christy Rose a call. Her number is 262-705-7745. And if you don't have a pen, you can email me at carolthecoach@AOL.com, and I will give you that number again, 262-705-7745. Or you can reach her at krose16@capellauniversity.edu. That's C-A-P-E-L-L-A, university.edu. All right, well, we will catch you next week. I'm really looking forward to seeing you and talking to you and working with you and, of course, listening to you. And as I say at the end of every show, there will only be one of you at all times, so fearlessly have the courage to be yourself. Have a great week.